The reading today is from 1 Peter chapter 2, and you can find it on page 1152 of the Bibles. 1152 is the page. And we're going to start at verse 9. So that's 1 Peter chapter 2. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of the foolish. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love your fellow believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. This is the word of the Lord.
Just put that up there. Great. Well, good morning, everybody. Going to attempt to do a presentation here for the first time here at St. D's for me. So please pray for me and the technology. And I hope that it won't be a distraction, but that it will help us as we consider life in the city today. This is our second in a series on mission in the church and towards our city. And so today we're going to look at what does it mean to be on a mission in our city today in London in 2011. And last week, you'll remember, if you were here, that Tim was talking about, he was exploding some of the myths surrounding mission. That mission is, historically, was something done by people in pith helmets who went off to desert islands somewhere in dangerous terrain to go and bring the word of God to distant nations. And rather, that mission is something that is incumbent on all of us who follow Jesus. So first off, I wanted to think about a little bit about our relationship to the city that we live in. How do we respond? How do we relate to London, Parsons Green, and our surrounding area? Is our relationship a positive one or a negative one towards our city? And does the Bible have anything to say about our relationship, what it ought to be and what it might be? Just a short clip to maybe evoke some thoughts. I hope that it does look a bit dark on the screen, I'm afraid, but we'll see how it turns out.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you could make out what was going on there, and I hope that it didn't bring back too many unhappy memories of your week commuting through London in our city. That clip was shot in, it comes from a feature-length film called Koyana Skartsi, which was filmed back in, I think, 1992. And Koyana Skartsi is very difficult to say. You have to practice it before you use it. And it means life out of balance. It's a Native American word from the Hopi tribe, I think, which is down near New Mexico or Arizona. And it means life out of balance. So the people who made that film using, I think it's called time capture or slow motion photography, they had a specific message to convey about what life in the city was like. And maybe they were portraying a negative view, saying, actually, this is life out of balance, the city. But is that the way that we see the city? And is that the way that God sees the city that we live in? And I'm sure that when we start talking and thinking about the city and our weekly existence, we have different reactions to it. What's our relationship to it? Maybe you feel that the city is a cold place. Or on the other end of the spectrum, maybe you think, well, the city's full of a buzz that attracts me, and I love the city for that purpose, for that reason. Maybe the city is a place full of relationship to you, that all of your friends are found in the city, and that is what has attracted you here in the first place. Or maybe in the midst of that crowd, like we just saw, the city could be the loneliest place that you could imagine. So what does the Bible have to say about the city? There, I'm very happy that I found a picture of a volume knob that goes up to 11. I was very happy about that. What that's supposed to portray there is a view of the city in the Bible of humanity with the volume turned up, if you like. There is both positive and negative in the biblical representation of city life. And what we find is it's just enhanced, it's condensed, it's loud. So we find both the good and the bad. And I just wanted to pick out a few biblical episodes to give us a flavor of the Bible's view on city life. So right at the beginning, the first episode that mentions a city, it's quite dark there. What we've got here is Abel lying dead on the ground and Cain running away, and up there there's a dark shadowy figure, which is God casting him out east of Eden. And Cain is the first person in the Bible to build a city, and it's shown therefore in a slightly negative view that Cain the murderer is seen building a city to protect himself instead of seeking God's protection perhaps. And then in Genesis chapter 11, the last chapter in the prehistory to the rest of the Bible, if you like, we find humanity building the Tower of Babel. It's seen as a testament to man's independence, how much man can achieve without God's help. And God, in the story we remember, gave each people different languages to mix up their building plans, and in the end, they failed in their pursuits. But then in the very next chapter, in Genesis chapter 12, we find Abraham, who's called out of Ur. There's a very early photograph of Abraham with his family leaving Ur in Chaldea, which is modern-day Iraq. And he's called out of a city. He's called out of a city to wander. And we hear in the book of Hebrews that he had his hope set on a future city, but he never actually lived in that city. So Abraham here, as the chosen person to form the people of God, that all of God's salvation purposes, if you like, were represented in Abraham at that stage in the Bible's history. But here he is leaving the city to wander. Again, a slightly negative view, if you like, of the city. And here we are, this is a picture of the Hebrews on the left there in Egypt. After Abraham, we had Isaac and Jacob, and Jacob's son Joseph. We remember from the musical, Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat, ended up in Egypt, and the people of Israel went to Egypt, and they're there, pictured on the left, tending animals, and the Egyptians on the right are doing sophisticated city things. Okay, so there's a sort of contrast between the two people. They didn't mix. The Egyptians found it abominable to be in the company of these animal tending farmers. They weren't sophisticated enough for their tastes. So there's a sort of contrast between city people and country people. And at this stage, the children of Israel were very much country people. So that it's, the Bible starts off with quite a negative view of city life. But then, when we come to King David, we see that he builds the temple, and he builds Jerusalem. He doesn't build the temple. Solomon built the temple. But he wanted to build the temple, and he wanted to build a city which would be God's home, God at the very heart of the Israelite community. And so now there's a twist to the biblical view of city life, and we find Jerusalem as being an idealized place of humanity gathering around the presence of God in the temple. And the ideal of Jerusalem on the left there is contrasted with Babylon. As we come to the prophetic era, Babylon represents the center of empire that wars against the people of God. And Babylon, in the end, was seen to triumph over Jerusalem because the Israelites had failed in their task of representing God and living just lives before the peoples of the world. So we have a contrast between the good city that doesn't succeed and the bad city that actually, at this point in the story, is seen to triumph. Okay, so the city is seen as both good and bad. Here's what Jesus had to say about Jerusalem. Luke chapter 19, 41. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come on you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." So here we have Jesus prophesying the destruction of Jerusalem that we know happened after his death in AD 70 when the Israelites rose up against the Roman Empire. The Romans moved in and destroyed Jerusalem and all that was within it. But we also see him weeping over the city with a huge heart of compassion over the city. I think that there are two instances in the Gospels where Jesus weeps. One is for his friend Lazarus, who's died, and the other is for the city of Jerusalem. So we're seeing here God's heart for the city is one of great compassion, but one of sadness at the failure of the city to live a righteous life. So that's a bit of a twist, if you like, to the idealized view of Jerusalem. And what of Babylon? Well, in Jeremiah, we see the prophet here writing to the people of Israel in exile in Babylon. In the Old Testament, when Jerusalem was destroyed for the first time, we see here the prophet Jeremiah saying to the people, "Seek the welfare of the city. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper." So here we find ourselves moving from a negative view of Babylon to a positive one. We're called to pray for the city within which we're seen as being in exile. So the biblical view of the city is both positive and negative. It's seen as humanity writ large, if you like, with the volume turned up. And the idealized hope that was put in the physical city of Jerusalem in some way was found to not bear fruit. But yet, we're called to live in exile, to live away from home, and to put down roots, and to seek the welfare of the place that we find ourselves. All that said, the movement of the Bible story from beginning to end is a movement from a garden, the Garden of Eden on the left, to a city, the New Jerusalem, that's prophesied in Revelation 21, the new heaven and the new earth where God dwells amongst his people. So we have to say that the movement of Scripture generally, from the beginning to the end, is a positive one with regards to the city. So what of the city that we find ourselves in today? And how are we called to be missionaries to that city? What of mission? Well, as I mentioned, I think Tim talked last week about our view of missionaries, of people in pith helmets. What does it mean for us today to see ourselves as missionaries? I love this music, don't you? Da-na. Feel free to sing along. Da-na-na. 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 Da-na. Sorry, that was just a bit of fun. Is mission possible for us? Is mission impossible? Is it something that somebody else does? Here in the bottom left-hand corner, we have an early photograph of David Livingstone. And it's very dark, but you can't really see it. That's Tom Hanks on a desert island. So here's representing mission, meaning people, special people, who go off on a mission from God to someone on a desert island who needs our help. That says help up there behind him. Or is mission possible? Is it for people like you and me? There's a picture from our Fair on the Green from last year or the year before, I think. And is it for people reaching people on the traffic island as well as the desert island? Okay, that didn't work. Well, I wanted to just look at the passage that we had read to us so well by Roz. And it's on page 1152. And to ask ourselves, well, in the epistles, what is it that we're taught about our relationship to the city, and what does mission look like for us in the city today? You see, I think that Peter had a view of the context that we find ourselves in, the background that we live in. And I think that this is still relevant to us today in London, in 2011. And there are two things, really, I think, that are at the heart of this. And we see this in verse 10, right at the bottom of page 1152. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. You see, at the heart of our mission is a sense of our identity. Our identity. Peter here is talking to a whole bunch of different churches. We find him at the beginning of his epistle over the page in chapter 1. He's talking to Christians throughout, which he refers to as exiles, scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. So this is around modern-day Turkey. They were the trading cities in Asia of the time. These are the strategic hubs, if you like, of the Roman Empire in the area where the gospel was growing. And he says to all these different people, these different communities from different nationalities, he says, you are a people. You are a people. In verse 9, he says, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. At the heart of our sense of reaching out to the city that we live amongst is a sense of our own identity, that we are a people. And we are a people. We are like a nation gathered around a core truth. And that core truth he summarized using the word mercy. In what sense do we see ourselves as a people here today gathered around the truth of mercy? Mercy being a one-word representation of the gospel message that God in Jesus Christ came to us, walked amongst us, died on our behalf, was risen to new life, giving us hope of eternal life and reconciliation, forgiveness in our relationship with God and in our relationships with one another. Mercy is a summary of the whole gospel message for us. Do we see ourselves as a people of mercy? And as Tim was saying, our whole lives are lived out in response to that, in thanksgiving to God for his mercy. A people of mercy. So the center of our nationality, if you like, our home, is in heaven with God. We're looking forward to that new Jerusalem that will come, as we talked about before in Revelation 21. Our home, our central point of our identity as a nation, if you like, is yet to be revealed. We can see ourselves here as exiles, as Peter has said here. We are living away from our home. And yet, we hold on to the promise in Jeremiah that if we seek the welfare of the city that we're in, we will be blessed as well. And that this is the reference that he gives here, to live such good lives among the pagans in verse 12, that they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. In fact, the word for pagans here just means nations. It doesn't carry a negative connotation as it might to us. He's just saying, around the other nations, live such good lives. So in that sense, we can see ourselves as having a dual nationality, that we have our identity in heaven, but we belong to this city. We are citizens of London, and we must embrace that and not fight against it. So, on to our mission. What do good lives look like today in London? What kind of lives may we live that would bring forth a response in others to glorify God? Well, just three practical areas that we might like to focus on and take away with us today. Firstly, a life of service. In a sense, we live our lives on behalf of those that we live amongst here in this city today. We are called to recognize that there are some in need, what the Bible calls the poor. Now, it might be difficult for us today to identify who we think around us we might think of as being poor. Maybe it's better for us to think of people who have some kind of a need, and maybe that's an easier way to think about it. Who in our communities might be in need, and who might be we able to meet those needs on God's behalf? Well, here are a few areas that you might like to take away. There are other others that will probably come to your mind. The food bank at the top there is run out of Christchurch Fulham down the road, and we long to partner with them. The food bank provides food, as the name suggests, to those who are just completely strapped for cash. They fall through the gaps in the benefits system. There is a delay to their benefit check, and they cannot actually feed their family. And they can get referred to the food bank through doctor's surgeries or through the job centre or other referring agencies to actually just go and get a week or 2 weeks' food for their families. If you were to go to the food bank website or even on the BBC website or in the Independent website, you'll find some very moving stories of families where the mother has actually gone undercover to the food bank without telling anybody else in the family that they've gone because there is no money to buy food for their family. And when they get to the food bank, they're surprised that instead of some Dickensian workhouse, that they end up being treated with dignity and respect, and they find the experience to be a positive one. How amazing is that? We can support the food bank by actually donating food to them. Every now and then they'll do a food drive down in Sainsbury's at Sands End. We can drop off food to them during the week, or we can volunteer to help them distribute the food and to show a friendly and life-giving face to those who come in need. Secondly, mums and toddlers. We run a group called Mumbies here on a Tuesday morning. Mumbies is awaiting a logo, so that's why we've got mums and toddlers up there. I wonder, those of you who have grown-up children, remember what it's like when you have children for the first time. For those of you who don't have children, it is a very, very scary thing to have a new human being completely dependent on you. And it was amazing, actually, last Tuesday, just to see some very newborn babies being brought in to the church building. The parents bringing these young children along, wide-eyed and wondering whether they're doing a good job. And Lisa just, I wonder if I brought the news article with me. Did I leave it down here? I had an article out of the, there we are, thank you, out of the Evening Standard this week, and that Lisa pointed my attention to. And it was an interview with Alana Weston, who is the creative director of Selfridges, a very, very, very successful woman. But she was talking a little bit about what it was to be a new mother. She said, "But all you want is someone to say you are a fantastic mother, so you can confess openly that you still haven't got them in a routine. Don't give me the whole story that you should put them on a bottle or be breastfeeding. Just say you're doing a great job." And that need that's so succinctly put there by Alana Weston is what, in a sense, what we hope to provide here at Mumbies, to come along and provide support for people where they are in need, just to tell them they're doing a good job. It's going to be okay. You will survive. And finally, just at the bottom there, under the heading of serving, Linkline is a new venture that is being opened up, hopefully, by a health hub, that GP surgery that's run just off Fulham Road, opposite Waitrose, down that end of Fulham Road. And the health hub there, the GP surgery, has been opened by Christians, and they hope to offer more than just the day-to-day health care for the area, but also to invest in the life of the people who come across their threshold. And one of the things that they would like to do is to be able to offer a service that's based on the telephone, whereby volunteers, they can give up 2 hours a week, for example, and they just phone people up who are feeling isolated. It may be the elderly who are housebound, or it may be the young mothers or young parents who need a friendly voice during the week. And so that's a very practical way that we can give something of our time in a very manageable way, just over the phone, to provide help to those in need. So serving. There are other areas of service that may apply to you. You might want to consider at work how, if you are in management at work, that you see, take the example of Jesus' leadership as servant leadership, that somehow as a manager, we serve those who work under us. That's a good one to go away and think about too. So service is one area that we can live good lives among the peoples here in London. Also, we can put ourselves to transforming the unjust structures in our communities. You'll see there the Fair Trade logo at the top, which has become very familiar when we go and do our shopping. I wonder if you realize that the Fair Trade organization is lobbying the government at the moment over cotton subsidies. The European Union subsidizes its farmers for cotton production even more than the United States does, thereby making it almost impossible for African cotton growers to market their wares in the European Union, thereby taking themselves out of poverty. So if we support the Fair Trade Organization, it is almost like giving a voice to those overseas who are the global poor. London citizens there, that's a way that you can get involved in local politics. One of the great ways that London citizens is putting pressure on our politicians locally in London is in the context of a living wage, making sure that those paid the minimum wage in London actually have enough to live on. That's called the living wage. So do join up with the London citizens if you want to express Jesus' transforming love in the political forum, somewhere where Christians should be. And a personal little hobby horse of mine, you can see someone being towed away there. I've mentioned before that I hate the way that cars just keep getting towed away outside our house here on Parsons Green. Don't know if anybody's ever been towed away here. I met someone at the 8 o'clock who was towed away within 5 minutes of parking here on Parsons Green. So I'm lobbying our local councillor about that. Are we the kind of people that just walk past as we see injustices happening in our community? Or are we the sort of people that seek the welfare of our city by seeking to transform injustices where we see them? And finally, proclaiming. Proclaiming. Often when Christians proclaim the gospel, the good news, it's not really perceived as good news at all. I don't know if you remember the story of the guy on Oxford Circus with his megaphone who actually had an ASBO given against him for a breach of the peace and for blaring the gospel into people's ears as they unwittingly crossed the road in front of him. Whatever the individual's story, it wasn't perceived necessarily as such good news as he intended, I don't think. So our proclamation, I would say, suggest, is so much more powerful if our lives back up our message, or if our lives in some way are our message. And just to take away with us, to think about our model for our proclamation to this city. Three words, to, for, and with. Because I believe that as we look at Jesus' example in the Gospels, we will go on a journey where we think we are proclaiming a gospel to people. Our hearts might soften, so we think, oh, actually, I'm proclaiming a gospel on others' behalf. And then finally, the love of the gospel compels us that we're actually proclaiming the gospel alongside people. The incarnation, the infleshing, is what that means, literally, of Jesus. The fact that Jesus, God, became flesh amongst us, the incarnation. This is a model for us of our proclamation to a world. We don't do it at people. We don't even do it necessarily for people in a patronizing kind of way, but we're actually walking alongside people, giving them worth, affirming them, giving them dignity as fellow citizens of this city, and using Jesus as our example. So there we have it. We're proclaiming the good news to people. Three ways that we can, let me just get back up and we can see that those three ways. There we go. Living good lives amongst people today. A mission for the city. So just to summarize, our city, the biblical view of our relationship to the city is both good and bad, but the biblical picture takes us from a garden to a city. Jesus, we're seen weeping over the city that he lived in. He inspires us to have a heart for the city that we live in. And our missionary call is to be people who serve and to transform and to proclaim good news by our lives in this city today. Amen.
Let's stand together by way of response, just a few moments before we sing our final song. I'd love